Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Dancer. Welcome to Get Real with Rick Dancer. We have an interesting show. And what I love about doing what I do is I don't really know where this is going to go. And that's kind of the beauty in Get Real, because you can't fake it. Recently, I put up, let me give you our sponsors first. So number one, our main sponsor is Boomp. Chris Dental Family Dentistry out of Eugene, Oregon. They also do dentures. Dr. Bratlin believes in freedom of speech. He believes in conversations that make people uncomfortable. He believes in putting up billboards that say back the blue. And he also believes that your teeth and your health care shouldn't depend on whether or not you've been vaccinated or not. That's Dr. Michael Bratlin. If you need a new dentist, if you want a dentist that you, we're kind of learning, if a company doesn't support what we believe, sometimes we don't want to do business with those companies. Disney, Target, Bud Light. And we want to do business with people that have American values. And Dr. Bratlin is one of those. Our other sponsor tonight is Tim and May with BS Free MD. They're going to be on at the end of the show. I've got a little clip from them to tell you what came out last night on DocTales with Cocktails, and their new podcast is really good. That's just coming out. Actually, it goes live today. So they'll be up after that. Okay, so here's how this starts. I go online. Kathy and I went on a hike. We kept passing all these folks from the Amish community here in Townsend, Montana. And, we'd say hi, and some of them would say hi, some of them didn't. We don't really understand the culture, and I'd really like to. But we got out to this site, started to rain, it was pouring. And all of a sudden, one guy, starts cutting down limbs and trees and asked us to collect little particles. Anyway, bottom line, we had this nice bonfire to keep us warm. And then they kind of talked with us a little bit. And I told the one guy, can I get a hold of you? I'd like to find out more about what you guys do. And he says, yeah, but we can't do like an interview or anything. And I said, okay. From that, the guy you're going to meet here in a second, Matt Peachy, contacted me. He lives way across the country, well, maybe four states. And he said, I used to be Amish. I left the community. And I thought, I would love to talk about this. And then he knows a guy, Richard Miller, who's going to come on, who knows a lot about this. So this is not an Amish bashing show. But what I want to know is why people leave, what this is about. And so that's why Matt is joining us. Matt, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So now, where are you from? Where do you live?
North Carolina.
North Carolina.
I am from the other side of the country.
See, so you are more than four states. You're way. But are you from there?
No, I grew up in Northeast Kentucky.
Okay, because you don't have an accent.
Interesting. That depends who you ask.
Okay, not as much as Richard. I was listening to Richard. So here's Richard Miller.
Hey.
Richard's got a little bit more. Where are you from, Richard?
Southeast Missouri.
Oh, well, that's not like the South, right?
We consider ourselves part of the South. I live in Ohio now.
Oh, Ohio. My wife's from Ohio.
I'm sitting outside of McDonald's and right in the heart of Amish country, looking in through the window, watching an Amish family eat their McDonald's meal.
Well, there you go. So tell me, let's start with you, Matt. You grew up Amish. Why did you contact me when you saw that video and that kind of stuff? What was your purpose?
So I don't remember what I commented, but I was, scrolling Facebook like we do sometimes, and I've followed you for several years. I always enjoy reading your write-ups and so forth. But I was scrolling through. You had this whole story about your hike. But what caught my attention was, I'm scrolling through it, and here's these pictures of these Amish people, and I'm thinking Rick Dancer and Amish. So obviously that caught my attention, because I didn't recognize anyone individually. But the way they dress was very familiar to me. I'm sure that if I were to talk with them, we would probably know some of the same people, and they come from the same circles that I do. So, that caught my attention immediately, I read the whole story. I looked at all the pictures and everything, and then I commented. I don't remember what I commented, but something to the effect that I grew up Amish,
Why did you leave? Why did you leave the Amish community?
So that's a long story. The short answer is that I got born again. And that comes as a surprise to a lot of people, because everyone rightly believes that the Amish are a Christian community, and they are. But I would say that they have a very different understanding of God, and I got a revelation of a God that was completely different than the God that I had been taught and grown up with, and it changed my life, you know. But the natural result of that is that I no longer quite fit into the framework, and the framework is very tight in Amish culture. If you don't fit, you just don't really have a place there, and so.
Do you think a lot of people, like especially people that aren't of the Christian faith or of faith like that, would think, oh, well, you know, it's all the same. You all believe in God and it's all about Jesus and you do this, but there's so many different branches. It really is it's a completely different thing.
Yeah. I'm not sure how it looks from someone, you know, that completely on the outside that makes no profession of faith, you know, if they, you know, probably to some extent. I do know for a fact that for a lot of people that are not familiar at all with Amish and Mennonite culture, to them, Amish and Mennonite and that whole culture just appears to be pretty much the same thing. And it's not. It's not at all. There's probably hundreds of subcultures inside of Amish and Mennonite, the overarching Amish and Mennonite culture.
We have a group out here in Montana that people, I made the mistake of assuming, I thought these people were Hutterites. And there's a difference because they can drive where the Amish don't drive, but somebody else drives them. Richard Miller, how were you connected in all this?
My dad grew up Amish, and so I've got a lot of Amish relatives, that I grew up in a ultra-conservative Mennonite setting in a church made up primarily of people who had left the Amish. And so I spoke their language that they use at home, their everyday language, before I spoke English. And he kind of erst about so good as he hang schwester kind of when that guns. And I just said I could speak Pennsylvania Dutch, which is kind of a misnomer, almost as good as I can speak English, but not quite, to translate that. And then I have become very fascinated with the whole culture and the that I grew up in. And I wanted to understand, because I wasn't finding the answers where I was at. And so I began looking more and more and more into the culture to understand the nuances, the foundational frameworks of the belief systems and the complexities that arise. You know, there was a period of my life where I kind of wrote all the Amish and Mennonites off. I didn't want anything to do with them, but I discovered people who are, Matt said it very well, where he talked about there's so many subcultures. There's subcultures, hundreds of subcultures, like he said, in the Amish and Mennonites. So to make a general rule about them all, there's a few safe ones, but most of the blanket statements about them would not be correct for everybody.
So what is the basic belief as to why they dress so primitively? They don't use, and I know this is a subculture too, because you know I saw generators out here and on some of the property, but then some of them don't use electricity. But I said to my wife, and I'm kind of hoping that people don't watch this that are, because they don't have media anyway. But there's, you know, you see a generator. I said, what's the difference between having a generator and electricity coming to your house? I don't understand.
I'll let you take that, Matt.
The majority of the rules that they follow are probably do not have any basis in, rationality, right? There's probably more. How would you describe this? The foundational goal for most Amish and Mennonite cultures is to maintain separation from what they have defined as the world, which is everyone else out there. That is one of the primary goals, is to maintain separation, because they believe that is foundational to maintaining their definition of what is pure and what is holy, which is basically their culture and their belief system. And so a lot of the rules and regulations surrounding their lifestyle is to maintain the lifestyle and separation from the world. Not necessarily that it makes sense, but it's to maintain a separation there and not blur those lines or allow, give their young people an open door to just, you know, be lost to the world, so to speak.
So when you're out of it, what do you see that that does to those folks? Do you get what I mean?
I'm not sure that I do.
How? Okay, because it's based on Christ, right? All right.
Yes and no.
Okay, now if you're going to say yes and no, then you have to answer, you have to explain why.
Here is the, so 3 or 4 years ago, I had a little bit of a personal revelation, okay, if I can talk about that.
Yep. It's my show. You can do whatever you want.
And I'll abbreviate this because I know we're covering a lot of ground here, but I realized, and the way I came to this is that I was analyzing some of the issues that I saw in the church that I was growing up in, just a whole bunch of issues that were going on. And I was like, you know, how does this happen? Because I knew some of the history of this church, and I knew what they had been at one time, and I knew where they are now. And I was trying to wrap my mind around some of this stuff. And it suddenly occurred to me that at some point in their in that particular church's journey, and I think this is safe to say for the entire culture, but their lifestyle became more important than the life within. The life of Christ, at some point in their journey, they had to make a decision between, do I want the life of Christ and the Holy Spirit, or do I want to maintain my lifestyle in the way we live and the way we have done things?
So the cultural religion,
without fail, they will, when they are presented with that subconsciously, they will choose the culture and the religion over the life of Christ.
When you bring that up, and Richard, you could pipe in here anytime, buddy. But you know what? There's other cultures that do the same thing. I mean, I knew, we're stepping on some hard ground. I don't mind bashing the Christians because I'm kind of okay with that. But I mean, I see that in the Jewish faith as well.
Oh, it's all over.
You know,
it's all,
you see, yeah. Like there's cultural Jews. And then there are Jews who really do, you know, they follow the letter of the law, which I don't have a problem with. But, you know, you're following, here's what Yahweh said to do, and they're following through that process. But it is interesting how easy, and I think Christians do the same thing in a different way, how we get away from Jesus, and it becomes worshiping the culture of our Sunday service, or how we, you know, we don't drink, so we stay away from that. You know what I mean? Those cultural things.
It exists
things
to some extent in every denomination out there, I am convinced.
So, Richard, what have you seen? You're go ahead.
So, the underlying all this is a desire to please God and to ultimately end up going to heaven. And then, so they codified it years ago, and it's based on, I hate to say this, but a lot of their fundamental belief system is based on their works being good enough. So McKenna Ershoffer, we can just hope that we are good enough for God. If that is what you have, it makes a lot of rational sense to go all out with the rules to try to somehow live holy enough to God and hope that you make it in the end. And that's what underlies much of their belief system. Now, if you go out of the Amish and go start talking to the Mennonite world, many of them will tell you, no, we don't believe that. Let me ask them a few questions. I'll prove that they believe it. And like Matt said it very well, when they're presented with the choice, they instinctively default to that fundamental underlying. It's the ethos of the Anabaptist religion, which includes Mennonites and Amish. Anabaptist comes from way back in the days of Reformation. Anna means again, and they were rebaptized. They were baptized as infants in the Reformed churches and in the Catholic churches, and then they joined the Anabaptist sect, which was Mennonites then. Amish split off of Mennonites, so way back in the day, Jacob Ammon is the one that split off. And so that is their underlying ethos for the Anabaptist religion, is that we do works good enough and hope we get there. Having said that, there are many, many, many Amish, and particularly Mennonites, who they might be in the religion that's their underlying ethos, but actually have transcended that. And tomorrow I'm going to go pick up an Amish man and his wife. Their new order, so they're a little bit more progressive, but they do horse and buggy. And he has transcended that personally, but he can't get away from the ethos because I shouldn't say that personally about him. He might be able to, but ultimately, even his church, that's the underlying ethos, is that we do good enough and hope we can make it at the end.
So when you leave the culture, what's that like, Matt?
I think, I mean, it's different for everyone, but one thing that I was just, mentally reliving just a little bit as Richard was talking was I was remembering what it felt like to leave that culture where almost your entire dependence on being able to and being able to live a good life, ultimately get to heaven, have your children turn out right, live a good, successful life, stay plugged into the community. Almost all of that depended on your connection to the church, right? On the connection to the community. When you leave that, all of a sudden, you no longer have that dependence, and you suddenly realize if you leave as a believer, you suddenly realize that all of my dependence at this point is in Christ. Like, I have nothing else because it actually forces, in a very good way, it forces you to at a deep level, examine your motives, examine your belief system, examine your, really your entire belief system would be the best way to put it, because, you start to analyze why you do the things that you do and what is right and what is wrong. And, your family, you look at the future of your family and so forth, and like, what really is going to keep my family? I can't, the church is a man-made, this church is a man-made organization. I want my confidence to be in something deeper than that. But what is my confidence really in? And you begin to really dig and try to find some of those things. So that's one thing that happened for me.
So how is your family still in the Amish tradition?
So my family is in an ultra conservative culture, similar to what Richard grew up in.
And so do they talk to you?
They talk to me. Yes. We are welcome at home, much more so since I have children, and, the grandchildren have loosened things up a lot or warmed up the atmosphere at my dad's house. But there are still some, pretty significant walls there. We still are not allowed to eat at the same table. My family can't eat at the same table as their family. My kids can, but I can't. So usually my wife and I either end up sitting at a different table, or then we all, we just sit off the side somewhere or somewhere else. So they can't eat with me.
Why?
My siblings typically aren't allowed to ride with me in the same vehicle. They're not allowed to spend, too much time with me. There's some boundaries there.
Why?
Still, after 12 years.
Why?
It's a fear, the fear of losing or of that influence, because really the Holy Grail is the culture, remaining a part of this church, remaining a part of this this culture, this religion. And, for my dad, I think a lot of it would just be, number one, loyalty to his belief. His entire belief system would be founded in that religion. So this is just the way they do things. But number two is also the fear of me maybe influencing one of my siblings to also leave. And that's, that's a huge deal in that culture. Mm-hmm.
Richard, did you experience the same thing with your family?
I left in a very different way. I got excommunicated from the church when I was 19, almost 20, and or 18. I don't remember. I've been excommunicated three times and banned once. I'm a sucker for punishment, I guess. But in the Mennonites, they'll still eat with you, except one of my bannings. Some of them would eat with me, but I wasn't allowed to socialize with anyone. Very, very harsh. But I remember well, I got to say this, when I was a boy, in my childhood, my Amish relatives came down from Iowa to visit my grandparents, who had been excommunicated for leaving. And it came time to eat lunch, and they put the tables up and they set up separate tables, two separate tables, because my Amish relatives couldn't eat with my grandparents. And then but I had an ornery Amish aunt, and she moved the tables an inch apart, and then she covered it with a tablecloth. And they followed the letter of the law, but they found a way around it. And I got to say this, Matt, correct me if you think I'm wrong, but there is nobody that is more adept at getting around the rules than a little Amish boy or a little Mennonite boy. We are really good at that.
Where there is a will, there is a way. It's 100% true.
So, you know, as we're talking, it's kind of interesting, though, because, you know, I see that in the Christian church. When I left, I left church probably 20 years ago because, and, you know, like you're saying, Matt, I felt like God said, Rick, this isn't where I want you. You have to get out of this because I want you to experience freedom in me, not, you know, every song and church. I knew when one song led to the next song, you know, I'd hear the interlude and going, oh, how great thou art. Now, yep, there it is. Everything was this routine. And when my wife and I left, there were people that just stopped talking to it. We were like not officially excommunicated, but we were lost, and they would tell people not to be around us because other people might, you know, be inspired to do the same thing. So we were shunned. Isn't that weird? Because I know Jews do that. I know Mormons do that. Seventh-day Adventists. I mean, what is it about? I mean, what I find interesting about this is that is exactly the polar opposite of what Jesus lived his life doing. You know, I mean, I study Hebrew. So I love some of the Jewish tradition, and I understand there's reasons God asks people to do certain things. So I get that. But when it becomes this thing where you're relationally not connecting to other people, aren't we here to try to bring other people to God? And if you don't talk to them or won't, you know what I mean? If you put up all these walls that are false, how does that work? How is that living up to the command of Jesus to go love one another, you know?
I think, as you know, human nature is always has been and always will be we avoid and we cut off the things that we fear.
Yeah.
You know, and anytime I'm sure I do that in other ways,
well, like Democrats and Republicans.
There's you know, there's a million ways this plays out in our lives, and you know, obviously I understand the process enough now that I actively look for those kinds of things in my life, and I try to, you know, push past them, but it's a subconscious human reaction, I think, to things that we are afraid of, to cut them off and try to insulate ourselves because we don't want to go there.
So Matt and Richard, do you think we do that because it's, I mean, look at all the Old Testament stories, you know, it is much, look at Moses coming down. It was much easier to create a calf out of gold and worship it because we did that back in Egypt. When push came to shove and it got hard, I'm trusting this God up here that I can't see. And so we create religions or boxes. If I do A, B, C, and D, then I'm okay. When God's kind of telling us, I think through his story and through Christ, just listen to me. This is you and me, but we are so afraid to have relationship with a God because we can't see him and we have to rely on that still small voice that we create. Oh, let's put God in a cow. Let's put God in a culture. Let's make sure we say, when we walk in the church at Catholics, we put the water, the holy water. If I do this, okay, now I'm clean. You know what I mean? I think I'm not saying all that stuff's bad. I'm just saying when we start worshiping that over God, worshiping culture over God, worshiping a system over human beings. Because how are people who are, and let's just stick with the Amish here. If you're being Amish and you're not talking to people or you're not really relating to people, so you just have your own little club, and the Methodists do the same thing and the Baptists do the same thing because everybody thinks they have the right handle on religion. This is fascinating. I'm just as bad. I mean, I think people look at Amish and say, okay, well, look what you guys are doing, blah, 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 blah. But you have to look at yourself and go, how don't I kind of do that in my own life or in my church or in my Jewish faith or in my Adventist faith? Don't we do sort of the same thing, but maybe it's not as obvious?
Every time I find fault in other people, I'm able to look in the mirror and find the same thing going on in my own life in a different way or in a different area. You know, so it's I don't have a rock to throw. I'll be the first to say that. But here's an interesting story on the Amish. You were talking about, you know, going out and telling people and try, like, if I have the truth, I'm going to tell other people about it, right? And Richard could probably explain why this is better than I can. But I personally know of a situation where some people were basically pushed out of an Amish church because they owned a lumber company. They were selling lumber and hardware and building supplies and so forth. And they began to put gospel tracts in the invoices that they would send out to their vendors. And the church found out about that and approached them and said that they can't be doing that. That's not, the Amish just don't really evangelize for the most part. They don't teach evangelism and they don't practice it. But this was something that they were told was not acceptable. And they ended up leaving the church as a result of that.
Isn't that interesting? Because I think what's really odd about that, and again, I could put this on any faith. You really create a club, and you have if you're going to be in the club, and Amish is not going to be a big seller. I mean, to a lot of people, you know. I mean, it's easy to be in another church, be it Baptist, Mormon, whatever. It's you know what? Because I've noticed this with some of my Mormon friends too. It's like, here's the rules, bam, 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 bam. It's all lined out. Okay, as long as I do that, I'm going to have a better shot of getting to heaven and doing this. And yet, like you guys said, when you're little kids, you can skirt it. Well, maybe we're not supposed to drink Pepsi or something, and then so I'll have an off brand. Or something. You know what I mean? We're always skirting those limits, and all that says to the rest of the world is hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. You know, it just screams hypocrisy, whether you're Mormon, LDS, Christian, Baptist, Methodist, Amish, Mennonite, Quaker. We create these cultures that become, you know, do you ever wonder if God's like scratching his head going, I gave him those wonderful traditions to do, to honor me and to remind people, because I think we kind of need traditions to remind us of the things to do. And they start always go to worshiping the tradition over me. And like, God must have, if he wasn't God, he'd probably have a real, he'd need therapy, you know, somebody, because everybody, I give you these things to be good or to help God, to help bring you to me. And you always make them about the thing and rather than about me. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. You know, when you grow up in the ultra-conservative setting, religious setting, like Matt and I did, the Amish or the ultra-conservative Mennonites, and you experience this dynamic kind of on steroids, and you start thinking like, my people are bad people because they do this. And then you get out and you start looking around and you go, no, just like you're saying, you keep saying, Rick, the Methodists do it, the Mormons do it. This is part of the human condition. And then if you're smart, you actually start looking at your own heart, like Matt was saying, going, crap, this is me. And what I object to is this is part of the human condition, something we all got to fight. What I really object to is the systemization of it in a religious culture. Because I think when I go, my wife and I have been reading through the New Testament together recently, and we see this theme. It's love, love. By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, that you love one another. You know, the two greatest commandments, everything in the law comes down to two things, love God and love your neighbor. Like all this stuff comes down to love, and I go start looking around, and I go, where are the churches? Like the thing of loving God and loving each other is a foundation of Christianity. Right. It's actually like it says in the Bible, it's going to be our tag. It's going to be our identifier. And where are the churches that spend 25% of their time seeking to discover what this is and how to live it out. The 25%, is that asking too much? And I think somebody, I think it was Matt mentioned about, this is about fear. We do all this stuff out of fear.
Right.
And the Bible says perfect love casts out fear. The two, perfect love and fear, are not compatible. And what if we focused on the love thing and loving God and loving each other, and that's going to get rid of the fear. And all of a sudden we shift into a completely different way of living. And that's what these are still, regardless of my differences with them, they are my people and I love them and I love them dearly. And I feel very comfortable around most of them. I enjoy hanging out with them. And I have clients that are Amish in my work, and I travel and I meet them, and it's just a pile of fun. But ultimately, I want us all to shift over to love, not fear.
Yeah, because I mean, that's what I really noticed during the dark time, which is, when that happened, you know, I kept hearing over and over that verse in the Bible, fear not, for fear brings on more evil. And boy, is that true, that we learned that. And look how culturally we did the same thing. So, you know, a lot of people on the left would be very critical of Amish or people, you know, in Christian churches for doing the same thing. But like we've been talking, we all do it. So they did it in a political way. Here's the things you have to do to be a good person, to get to heaven. I mean, not heaven, but to live cultural heaven is the mask, the vax, the booster, all this stuff. So if those people didn't do it, they shunned you the same way that churches do to people. So like we're talking, this is like a human condition. And this, you guys, I know you're looking at me like I'm crazy. This is like phenomenal to me. This is how I think all conversations should go. I did not know where this is going, but now I hear God telling me, Rick, you need to look in your own life and look at the ways that you do this, because don't you be criticizing other people when I could stand you in a line and say, here, Rick, here's what you're doing. And to free ourselves of that. You know what I mean? Because I don't think God wants us to live like that. You know, I mean, traditions are great. I can't stand like Christmas anymore and Easter. And this is just me. It's because one, Easter, that it's Ishtar. It's worshiping the goddess of fertility. How dare you put the goddess of fertility name on my Savior's crucifixion? Plus, it didn't happen then, so it doesn't matter. On that, yes, I would worship that Jesus died for me. I that's the most important thing in my life. But, and then Jews, a lot of Jews, as I understand from studying some Hebrew, that most in the old time they didn't even celebrate birthdays. So we have Christmas as the biggest holiday for and I love the irony of the Easter ham. So on Easter, what do we serve for our Lord's dinner? But something he would not even eat and told us not to eat. And it doesn't matter because we love ham. No, it probably matters because God said, don't eat the shit. but the Easter ham, grandma always had it. So we're going to continue. But look at those kind of traditions that we put in. The Christmas tree, it's a phallic symbol. It was the worship of the penis. and yet... We still, you know, we don't have to be all that technical, but those are things that we need to look at and go, what are we really doing here? And how much is getting in the way of the actual celebration of the birth of a Savior, the death of a Savior, and get away from some of the traditions that are man-made, which God's not real thrilled about, and get back to the traditions that he established for us, you know? I'm fascinated. You guys said that. So Matt, how has your life changed? Like, I know, because you said, you know, you go, when I asked Matt if you do this, he goes, yeah, but a lot of it has to do with like Jesus. And I want to, can I talk about that? I'm going, hell yeah.
So how has my life changed? Is that the question?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like you look like a really super happy, cool dude, you know,
so in just about every conceivable way, you know, I could, man, I don't even know where to start, to be honest with you. Like, just
do you feel so free from what you grew up with?
Yes, I would never want, I could not go back. I don't think, you know, there are people occasionally that go back. For the most part, they don't. But for me to try to imagine myself to go back and to try to condense myself into that culture again I can't even imagine that.
Would it be like taking a, you know, like you have a bald eagle that's a baby, and then its wings start expanding and they're so big, like 6 foot expand, and you're soaring, and then somebody says, okay, pull in your wings and land because we're staying in the nest. And it'd be like,
not only that, but you have learned that flying is the right thing to do if you're an eagle. Flying is the right thing to do, and all of a sudden now you're going against everything you believe to be right to try to not fly anymore. Right. So yes, that's a good analogy.
I heard a great thing on Jordan. You ever listen to Jordan Peterson?
Yes, sometimes.
Okay, he was talking about Jonah the other day, and I found this story fascinating, especially for the times. Is he's saying, okay, so Jonah, God tells Jonah, go tell the Ninevites, your enemy, that they're doing the wrong thing, and I'm going to take them out. Jonah's like, hell no. Gets on a boat, goes out, storm starts, sailors are going, God doesn't like somebody here. And Jonah goes, yeah, it's probably me. I'm kind of annoyed. They throw him over. He goes into a fish's belly for 3 days, which he says is absolutely torturous, and finally ends up going and doing what he says. Jordan Peterson says, okay, so what's the moral of the story? If you don't do the thing that God puts on your heart and do it like what he tells you to do, there's a much worse consequence awaiting you. Mm-hmm. So if your thing is to speak the truth, to speak out, to talk to people, and you shut up now and you're not saying what you're feeling and you're not saying what you sense is the truth, you better beware, because there's a belly and a whale waiting for you. Mm-hmm. There's something worse coming than the attack from the mob on social media. So it's really calling us out to say, to go out and speak the truth. And you guys are really brave to come on here. I mean, I think it's, and it's, you guys, I think it's just enlightening. And aren't these the kind of conversations we should have, where I'm proud of this? I think we're not knocking anybody. We're knocking everybody.
Exactly. We're calling everybody to a higher, especially the Christian community, to a higher standard that was set for us by, quotation marks, the boss man. I want to speak to something about people leaving and what that's like. I help at a conference that one of my friends puts on, a nonprofit, and we have a lot of Mennonite and Amish people come to this conference. And like, let me paint you a picture. If you're walking down the street in the Amish and Mennonite religion, by and large, you're walking down the street, you're a man, you see a woman, you think a lustful thought, and a truck hits you. Before you have repented of that and prayed and asked God for forgiveness, a truck hits you and kills you, you're going to hell. That is what that does to you is straight up bondage. Okay.
Yeah.
And at this conference, my friend that hosts the conference skillfully takes them on a journey of exploring that, using a fictional hippie dude, smoking pot, finds this track, has an encounter with God, gets up, his blood's snot and tears are running, he's going down the road smoking his pot, whatever, the truck hits him and kills him, and then he leaves them hanging. Where did he go? And now they have to wrestle with that. People come out of that conference realizing that you don't hop in and out of salvation 20 times a day depending on your behavior, back to the works thing. And that right there is so freeing to people. By the end of the conference, their faces are lit up, and they go from that, just darkness hanging over them. There's other factors to it too. But that one thing just completely changes people. And then they are freed to go on and live in relationship rather than this fear-based. That, when Matt was talking about God, I cringed a little bit when you said a different God. And I know what you meant, and you're absolutely right. But the God of the Amish and Mennonites is the same God, but their view of him is of a harsh God with a big, generally speaking, of a harsh God with a big stick waiting to smack you, including sending you to hell for the slightest infraction, if not properly repented of.
And I think that's kind of universal for a lot of churches.
Yep.
you know, Christian, all of them, there's not, and not all of them, there's some that are different than that. You know, but what happens to God's grace? And, you know, and I grew up like that. I mean, I didn't grow up Mennonite or Amish or something, but my family was really weird about, I mean, my dad really did think, you know, there were certain things that you'd go straight to hell for. And I'm mm-hmm. going, I think there's this loving God who kind of goes, hey, Rick, okay, yeah, you messed up. And then I'm over here going, oh, forgive me, you know, for this. And he's going, I don't remember that because I already did. So we're on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And I think there's so many people who can't accept his forgiveness. And then they keep wallowing in it rather than going, and I still do that at 64. Is there something happens? I say, okay, Rick, you've taken care of that. You went to God, you're repenting, you're trying to do this differently. Now let it go. Cause God's over here going, are you still on that? Oh my gosh, I got all this stuff over here planned for you. And you got this anchor hanging behind you going, yeah, I'll be there in a minute, God, but I feel so bad about this thing over here. It's like, shut the hell up and move. You know, God, I think we're crazy people. But I think this discussion makes anybody who's going to look at their LDS neighbor and go, oh, lad, look what they're doing. You're going to have to look at yourself, too.
Yep. And say, that's very good.
How do I worship religion in my own way over my God? And what am I doing? Oh, my gosh. Okay, so is there any other thought, like, just on your head that you really want to get out that
another very, very common dynamic of leaving the Amish and Mennonites is most people, myself included, are going to walk through a lot of confusion on their way out because there's going to be voices pulling from every single direction. They're not really going to fit anywhere because all of a sudden they're not really fitting in, which is why they're leaving. They're not really fitting in because of what they believe, there's a variety of reasons. Some of them leave because they all kinds of reasons, but I'm talking in the Christian context, the people that leave because of Christ and a desire for truth and a desire for something greater than what they're experiencing in the Anabaptist culture. There is going to be a tremendous amount of voices, you know, from both sides of the aisle. And there's going to be this, most times there's going to be this period of kind of floundering and not really being sure of anything, because everything that their entire life and their entire belief system from the day they were born was founded in, all of a sudden that is all just moving and shifting. And a lot of it they're finding out is based in nothing. And so now they don't know what's truth and what's not truth. And so there's usually a period of, you know, just a lot of searching, a lot of confusion, a lot of, you know, they're facing rejection from their families. They're having people from their old culture telling them they're going to be lost. They're going to lose their families. Their kids are not going to turn out right. And so there's just a lot of stuff like that going on. So it's not easy to leave.
Right.
I told you earlier, you know, when I was 21 years old and I could have counted on one hand the number of people that I knew personally outside of the Amish and Mennonite culture. I was extremely sheltered, closed in, you know, grew up on the farm. I went to church. I went to school and that was about it. So I say that to kind of explain maybe a little bit of the dynamic that people run into when they encounter Amish and Mennonites. And they probably appear standoffish and they appear reserved and like it's hard to mingle with them. The reason is because they have no idea how to relate to you.
Right.
No idea. Most times they don't really know how to relate to people outside of kind of their own little world. And so leaving that, there's a lot of confusion and there's usually a lot of just intense searching and so forth involved in that process. But it's generally good for us.
Well, that's kind of what happened when I met these folks here, is we were hiking and we were running into different groups. There was about 15 of them there. And we're walking and we'd run into, and I go, oh, you know, and they'd have, and I'm going, it's hot. And they have those dresses on and they're all their clothes. I thought, oh my gosh, how do they do that? And, but we'd walk by and I go, hi. And they'd look at you and, you know, just kind of, and I said to Kathy, they don't come across like the most, but I've learned my impressions of people are not always accurate. So it just seemed like they were like, they, like they didn't seem super friendly. And then when we got put in this position of the rainstorm and everybody kind of having to work together, it was really interesting because they really got friendlier because they needed us to help and we needed them to help because they had all the tools. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had nothing and they were all prepared and we were like in shorts, you know? And so they're talking and then they start kind of talking and they were having a really good conversation. What I also mm-hmm. noticed though, that was kind of interesting is there was a couple other families up there and some of the families, it took them a while to come over to the Amish. They wanted to get warm, but it just took a while because I think they were unsure of who these people were and it made them uncomfortable too, which was, it was just, I love watching dynamics of people and challenging those, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I'm asking the guy, so can I shot video because I kind of knew the rule. So I shot some video of them just doing their thing. And I said, you guys, can I take video of you? And they said, as long as we're not posing. And I said, okay, no, I just shot some video mm-hmm. here and did it. And so I'd already done it. I've learned as a video producer that you shoot first, ask forgiveness later. And I would never use something if somebody told me not to. But he did yep. say, he gave me a phone number to the group and said I could call and come up and sit down and visit with them. And I may do that just as, you know, as a human being trying to study. Because look what I learned today. I wasn't expecting to be challenged. And now mm-hmm. I have two things in my head right now that I'm going, you do this and you need to stop that because that's your own little Amish Quaker Ricky mm-hmm. just doing that. And everybody watching this should be sitting there before you point your finger. You might want to look at what you're doing in your own life, you know? So
I want to say one thing if I can.
You sure can.
Even though I have moved on and I am a harsh critic of some of the foibles of the Amish and Mennonites, I'm also grateful that I grew up as one, and I'm grateful for the things that I learned there. Hard work is just expected. It's a great work. The work ethic in general is over the top excellent. The desire for community, which is so important, especially as we move into darker times, community, working together, helping each other out, those are just foundational elements of their culture, and I'm so grateful. And I, as I mentioned earlier, I will always be part of the macro, the larger Amish Mennonite community, because that's my birth, that's my upbringing. And even though I won't be part of a micro level, part of an Amish or Mennonite church going forward, I embrace this is my people, and I'm grateful that they are. And we're planning to move from Ohio to Southern Missouri soon. And one of the criteria that we used when we're trying to pick a place to move to was that it is not isolated from my people.
Right. You know, it's kind of interesting when you say that, as you think, because one of the things I thought when we were riding bikes out in their community one time, and I said to my wife, you know, there's something super charming about the thought of not having social media, not knowing what Joe Biden or Donald Trump said today, and being, because, you know, and so maybe what we do as humans, what we should do is take and borrow from these things, is to be looking and going, what are they mm-hmm. doing that I could implement in my own mm-hmm. life? What are some things that could make, and you don't have to follow their faith or take it to the extreme, but going, and that's kind of the sad part of them being so, what am I trying to say?
Insular.
By them being so insular, we don't get to experience some of the good things like that hard work ethic, those kind of things. We're missing. They're almost cheating us out of something that they feel is so great, and that's not good. You know what I mean? We could all be. They have some very valuable things that maybe God's put into their life that we need, but because of this religious bullshit, we're not sharing those things. So mm-hmm. maybe we look at other people's things. Not, you know, I'm not going to go adopt some, you know, I almost said something I shouldn't say, but there's things I'm not going to adopt about certain faiths, but there's also some things where you go, the basics of that is to be closer to God. And then to say, when does my closeness to God, when does the instrument to make me closer to God become my worship item rather than my God? Mm-hmm. So you know what I mean? Your culture becomes God, and our church, the building in American church becomes God. And, you know, having the song service last 10.17 minutes becomes God rather than what does God want to do today? I often used to say to my friends when I was, after I left the church, I'd say, you know, I wonder what would happen. I bet what happens every Sunday, God shows up, sits in the pew, and starts waiting for people to worship, you know, and do the thing they're going to do. Looks around and goes, oh, it's all about you again. Okay, well, I'll come back next Sunday. We'll try again. And walks out the door. Or even worse, he shows up as the homeless guy in the front row. And everybody works to position him to the right place to get him to the back so he's not bothering people. And going, that was actually Jesus you just put in the back pew. And he was trying to get up to the front because he had something to say and you didn't let him say it, mm-hmm. You know, stuff like that. You guys, that was pretty amazing. I'm excited. I like what God's doing here. And Richard, it was an honor to meet you. We should do this again. If you guys think of another way to do this, because I would do it again. Because you're in it, you would know what people would relate to. And this is not for the Amish. This is actually for the rest of us. I think we did a good job of kind of beating everybody up with a little stick.
Yeah.
It's like Richard said, calling everyone to a higher standard. And that's really, at the end of the day, that's what it's about. I don't have a rock to throw. I'm 100% with Richard. I'm grateful for a lot of the things that I was taught, a lot of the things that the values and so forth that I took away from the culture. And I am making conscious effort today to pass some of those things on to my own kids without having it attached to the religion, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed this very much. Thanks for having us.
Yep. Matt, thank you. It's an honor.
Matt Peachy, Richard Miller, thank you so much for being here. You guys share this on your pages so other people see it. I think there's just a deeper conversation here that we can all be having in our own churches. I'm sure I'll get slapped around by some.
Yeah. Me too.
Well, I will. But you know what? All I have to do is remind myself of that belly in the whale. I don't want to be there. I'm not good in claustrophobic situations. So I'd rather be out here getting slapped than in a belly of a whale waiting.
I agree.
Then you get vomited out. I mean, that had to hurt.
Yeah.
All right. See you guys later.
Thank you.
You're welcome. See you, Rick. Have a good evening.
You're welcome, man. So there you go. That's our conversation for tonight. I love that. That was awesome. Take something from that in your own life and see what you can do with that. Tim and May are here from BS Free MD. They do a podcast and they do all kinds of, they have a newsletter you need to find out more about. They're in Florida right now. And I said, just tape something up and come on. So they did.
Hey, Rick. We're back at Palm Tree Land and it's really nice and warm here. I had a nice meeting with the Florida Health Board to grant me a license.
He wasn't in trouble. Just trying to get us down here into palm tree cloud land. And the humidity is approaching, I think, 80% today. 80. And it's 80. A friend of ours with the temperature being 90 and the humidity being 80. Described it as the, what, sixth
gate of hell. We actually enjoy it because it's not cold. So anyways, show drops, it dropped today, is
Sheila Carroll, a pediatrician.
That's right.
Now turned health coach, coaching families, especially parents, to help their children and families maintain a healthy lifestyle, how to make positive changes with diet, exercise, and lifestyle modifications so that everyone remains healthy. It's really a positive thing instead of just saying lose weight, eat less and exercise more to a kid, which means nothing. So that's a great podcast episode that I think a lot of people will find really helpful. And she coaches people online. If you're interested, listen to that one. We did a small little DocTales last night at 6 p.m. Pacific time, although it was one of our, I'll call it the weaker ones, just because we were traveling and wanted to just make sure we kept current.
We got a lot of comments, though, because
Tim did
because we still are. We still are because we're in Central Florida. We are in the leprosy capital of the United States.
Check it out.
See, look. They're all gone. Fell right off.
Anyway, also, truth bombs are out Wednesdays at 12 a.m.
Yesterday's was laughter.
talking about laughter. Yeah. And, you know, Tim's an expert in inducing laughter and why it's healthy. And other than that, we hope you guys are enjoying a hot, sunny West Coast. We're great down here on the East. See you next time.
Cheers.
Okay, so you guys can find them on Spotify, any of your favorites. They also do some of the shows on Facebook Live. But go sign up for their newsletter, too, because that tells you everything that's coming up. Also has some really good tips and things like that, because they are really doctors. I mean, you know, Tim has helped me out. Well, that's probably not something that would sell him, would it? You're thinking he's not a mental health counselor, though, is he? All right. Share this on your page. Let other people know. Have a great weekend. We'll be back on Tuesday. And what is coming up on Tuesday? Oh, Stacey Randall is a friend of ours, all of us. She came on here when she found out she had terminal cancer, and she's still here and planning this big trip. And I don't know if she's on it or going on it, but I said, would you come on and talk about that? And she said, yes. And then for Thursday, if you guys have any ideas, I've got a couple feelers out there, but if you have an idea for a story, I got some great stories this week from people like you. If you have an idea for a show, please go to rickdancer.com or send me an email at rickdancer.com and tell me what that's all about. Give me the information I need to know. I want to get stuff from you guys. You're way more interesting than me. All right. Have a good night. I'll talk to you soon.